to emphasize the importance of political leaders. members, as politicians came, would be self attracted by the political leadership. I'm saying for Mr. Patel, noting the fact that Wednesday is an open cabinet day, not to say that we would that the minister arranges that at least the deputy attends with the minister. It was able to attend. So those are just the things that I want to express on behalf of the community. I've said that I was responsible for outcome 5. We've got a mandate to ensure that we develop integrity and skills for and to support the institute and staff. The purpose of the institute is to look at your institute and your budget actually. We know that with most of the departments, the budgets are not enough to address all the issues. But I think in discussing your AGT, you took cognizance of the fact that you did not cut off on those areas that are formerly with a view to ensuring that you deliver, even though the budget does not talk to the needs of the department as a country. And also, your ATT, as well as this reflective clarity, if you have submitted a revised site plan to which then your ATT was taught. If there are changes of naming of programs and sub-programs, please clarify that as well, because if you don't do that, it's going to create confusion to other members in terms of understanding exactly what these individuals are talking about. Maybe after a presentation, or you have an opportunity to refer to those specific sections. One other issue that maybe we would love to hear about is the political leadership, because here maybe we'll be able to address. We all know that there's been in a number of countries. Feeding was on, how are we going to take care of that in a way that is sustainable? It has been addressed with you. Is the intervention adequate? How are we going to sustain the process over the time again? This is relating to this question. I don't know if we have enough. I don't want to argue that you don't have enough to be able to conduct the research and be able to ascertain that we have got enough to give to students by way of this fund. The president in this corner, I really want to say that there are civil policies that need to be built, community policies. What is the progress of the department is that in relation to your ATP, transfer to universities, transfer to student colleges, migration issues. I know that you're committed to migration of community colleges to DHEC, but the issues that relate to participation vis-a-vis salaries of lecturers, and how I'm going to address the issue of lecturers that do not have sufficient qualifications to perform in the university colleges. Those are the issues that you spoke about today that I want to believe that you are going to be able to address and be able to respond to questions by English. The issue of federal system of students is it would seem to be the federal system in the institution of higher learning. Are we still having problems of administrative problems in that regard? The issue of IAS, there has been complaints about the fact that staff that is responsible for IAS are not paid timely or they are not paid regularly and they are supposed to be paid, and all those issues with well, of course, I'm not, and there are lots of other issues that the members are going to be engaging. I just wanted to give this opening remarks because some of the issues, a number of those that I'm raising, should be taken care of as the implementation of the policy. We want to support the decision.
Technical work, but at the end of the day, we came here waiting the how we utilize our resources for education and training in general, but for post-school education and training in particular. In regards to TVET colleges, in community education and training colleges, I indicated that we split the branches, so that's number one. The migration process was completed on 31st March 2015. We had a year in which we were running to be able to take on the budget that we had taken over with the function shift, deal with a number of administration problems and issues. There are still issues that are pending. But Jefferson, I must say that I think this has been one of the biggest since 1994 or 1995, when we established, when the nine provinces were established and the nine administrations, and with this mentoring with all the previous system and the absorption of staff, etc. This, I think, has been one of the second biggest particular process. So there's still a considerable number of harmonization to be done, and I can go into more detail if that is particularly required. The issue around qualifications versus salaries is, if it is the issue of RQE relevant education qualification value, we must say that while we took this previous year, this financial year is two, in order to just at least make sure that everybody gets paid and paid on time, the issue of non-implementation of collective agreements on RQE upgrading, that is from 13 to 14, because there's a substantial salary increase, as well as a 10% lump sum in terms of other RQE changes. And the implementation of the collective agreement. We are busy with a particular process. The other particular part is the pay progression, the inner pay progression. Now, we understand that, for example, I'm going to give you an example. I'm working on a case of the East Cape Midlands College. There, the college failed to implement the REQV. All the lecturers are paid at level 13, immaterial of the qualifications that they hold. And, for example, some lecturers, we owe them per head of 2015-16, 60,000 rand. So, one can understand that particular issue. We did it with East Cape Midlands, but this is a issue that will continue to cause tensions. However, we are relying on the Labour Relations Act that spoke of the old employer and the new employer, and that at least what we did do is to ensure that we have the same terms and conditions and benefits for the new employers. It mustn't be lower. But we know that it normally works in business where you have a single employer, new old one, and a single new employer, and they come over. But in our case, we've got many, many employers in the public service, and so staff do start comparing. So there is an unevenness in regards to the issue of benefits, for example, the adult education and training sector, we have got some provinces that people were paid on stipends. In other cases, they were on part-time contract but hourly. In other cases, full-time educators were used on a part-time basis. In some cases, you had to claim every month the hours that you needed to get paid. So that's really created a significant administrative burden. And it's not easy when on the 31st of March, if they employed and managed by colleges, as well as the provinces in terms of personnel, and AX educators were all within the provincial personnel to come over. The issue of lecture qualification. Union to the tune of 26 million euros. So that goes into about the hundreds of millions of rand. It doesn't relax in the development. We've got a strategy around that, and because it's a handover, Ms. Kushani, I think the only lady in the delegation will give us a presentation of the TLAC system, because our presenter is obtaining the policy one. So yes, clearly our step plan that we're going to go into is aligned to the national development plan, the SDGs, SONA, as well as the white paper. In regards to the personal systems, I think I sort of alluded to that, but the CFO will also then reflect on what we were on the personal system on the 1st of April 2015, and where are we now. Jefferson, the strategic overview, that's the next slide. So our strategic goals leading up to 2020, while it is within the issue of outcome 5, which deals with a capable and skilled workforce for an inclusive growth, is that our work basically is to ensure that we have very sound legislative framework, because Jefferson has realized almost 90% or more, 98% of our budget is based on transfer payments. And in order to ensure that those transfer payments that have been appropriate are adequately and efficiently spent, we do have to operate within a legislative framework that allows institutional delegations in regards to that. Our core mandate, other than the outcome of our work, is around economic growth and a skilled workforce, economic growth. Our core mandate is around teaching and learning. So we want to enhance that in regards to the curriculum, changing the curriculum, transforming the curriculum, both in community education and training, as well as technical vocational education and training. We cannot do this if we don't have the proper human resources that are geared up to be able to ensure that we implement the white paper post-school education and training. So capacity development, and again, education is a societal priority, it is a societal matter, and we therefore rely on a very strong stakeholder network. Unlike schools, we are basically the family and the parents that want us to deal with our land, we have to deal with industry, we have to deal with business, in terms of ensuring that education and training is able to provide for the need of business. We also need to ensure continuous service delivery excellence within the department and its institution. And during the first financial year, which is the year that in which we are the transition, the 2015-2016, so the first financial year of the 5-year strategic plan, the department assumed the full responsibility, as I indicated on the 1st of April 2015. So we have effectively increased our staff complement from 1,200 to 38,000. The program vocational and continuing education was reconfigured, and I spoke to this, so I'm not going to go into that, as well as community education and training system. While we have an established TLAC system, it has to operate within our new post-school education and training white paper. But I think the big challenge is around creating this new institutional form of community education and training. And if we think we have to think of community education and training as a renamed adult education and training, then I think we were really mistaken, because white people really begins to talk to what the needs of the communities are. And I think as members of parliament, for years you have been arguing why is it so difficult if somebody just wants to have pre-med training on how to undertake small enterprise baking from home, providing. I mean, I saw a nice program yesterday, last night on ETV, about a young person who started selling detergent, starting off from 68 rand, and now is a multi-millionaire providing detergents to major retailers like Pick n Pay. So, that's really, that community education and training. It's a big systemic issue, but when you hear Dr. McClover talking to us about that particular issue, I spoke about the 6 budget programs. Now, in order to make it manageable, and noting how Parliament has created the space for institutions to operate within a governance structure of councils, that translating the 3,600 somewhat adult education and training centers to community colleges meant that basically we're putting a very, very big legislative decentralization to 3,500 institutions that never had a history of being able to govern issues. In fact, none of the provinces has even established the governance structure in terms of the adult education and training, the erstwhile adult education and training. So we've got 9 community education and training centers, 1 per province. So that's the 9, and they have all the powers that the legislature has given them. And therefore we have to focus on them, and each one of those community colleges manage the erstwhile adult education and training centers, which are now called community learning centers. We've got 50 technical vocational education training colleges, 26 universities, of which 3 are new, and the lifespan of our sector education and training authorities was extended by 32 years. And really this has been to make sure that before we can come up with the National Skills Development Strategy 4, as well as the CETA, that we begin to look at the policy issues as prescribed in the post-school education and training white paper to refocus them in terms of our integrated approach and in terms of our mandate. So there is change, and the winds of change are there. Now the 26-27 annual performance plan also includes the updates of the indicators to the strategic plan 2015-20. So it, the revised strategic plan is there in respect of the TVET and the CET program. So Chairperson, with that introduction, may I hand over to Mr. Tim Stogo, who is the Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. As you can see on slide 7, we'll go into the department structure, the budget, and some expenditure trends. We'll also do a summary of the allocations per program, as well as the economic classifications, the key expenditure items there. We will look at some of the budget pressures that we have and the financial performance of the department. On slide number 8, the information on slide number 8 was already shared by Mr. Patel. That slide emphasized the new 6 programs that we are functioning with, which include then a new program 4, in the place of the old DSET program, the new TVET program, and program 6, community education and training, as well as the name change of program 2. Mr. Patel also emphasized the change in the environment of the department, the increase in the number of employees, where we now stand at 38,031. Perhaps just to indicate that of that 38,031, we have a total full permanent establishment of 28,000. 9,942, while the other 9,099 consist of educator claims that received from the various community centres. Chair, slide number 9 and slide number 10 are not going into detail. It just specifies the 6 programs and the various aims of the 6 programs, with the emphasis obviously on program 4 and program 6 that reflect in the aims of the 2 new programs. On slide number 11, just to emphasize once again that apart from the 6 programs and the budget that's distributed between the 6 programs, in our case we also have direct charges. The direct charges that we have is the amount that we receive from National Treasury based on the skills levy contributions that SARS collects. And that is then for the funding of the 21 CETAs and the National Skills Fund. Now those direct charges are then separately indicated in the budget. We'll also see if you have a look perhaps at the E&E, that the Minister of Finance table, that the direct charges are separately reflected. On slide number 12, just an indication, if we exclude the direct charges, our budget increases with an annual average rate of 9.8%. That is from the 42 billion we had in 2015-16, and it grows to 55.3 billion in 2018-19. For 2016-17, our allocation is 49.2 billion, which is a 7.3 billion increase, approximately 18% from 2015-16. The direct charges itself, the skills levies for CETAs and the NSF, increases with an annual average rate of 11.8% over the period 2015-16 to 2018-19, from 15.8 billion to 22.1 billion, and the amount for 2016-17, the current financial year, 17.6 billion. As in the past, Program 3, University Education, is still dominating the budget of the department, the subsidies especially to universities. That is approximately 80.4% of the total budget. You will see that in a later slide as well. Consequently, also, transfer payments dominate the budget in terms of the economic classification of expenditure. And if you look at normal departmental services, and we exclude all the transfers that we must make, there's approximately 16.7% of the budget left. Of that, compensation of employees totals with the new establishment and the taking over of the TVET and CET staff, 7.8 billion rand for 2016-17. Now, the sad part is that in terms of normal operations, the department only has about 383 million rand to function with in 2016-17. That is approximately 0.8% of the total budget. The additional allocations that we received over the MTF period is 24.1 billion rand. Now, just to indicate how that was made up, if we look at compensation of employees, and especially then an increase on the various salaries of staff based on the sector-wise agreement, it's 840 million rand. If we look at the university fee, 0% increase, as indicated by you, over the MTF it's a total of 5.7 billion rand. It's broken up over the 3 years. For the current financial year, we received an additional 300 million rand. For the 2017-18 financial year, it goes up to 2.6 billion, and for 2018-19, it's 2.8 billion. So there is sufficient provision if you look at the 0% fee increase for the 2016 academic year over the MTF increase. There is a baseline adjustment across the 3 years, which will continue in the 2019-20 year. In terms of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, there's two allocations. The first one is historic debt relief. Those are debts that were actually accumulated in the various institutions of misfunded students who could not pay everything, and an additional amount of 2.5 billion, which is a once-off allocation for this financial year, was provided for that. And then also to support unfunded, continuing and new NSFAS students, a total amount of 8 billion has been provided over the MTF period. It is 2 billion for the current financial year. It grows to 2.9 billion for 2017-18 and 3 billion in 2018-19. For the function shift, there is an additional function shift. There's actually two, apart from the TVET and the CET functions that came over to the department in the 2015-16 financial year. As from 1 April this year, we now also have the administrative responsibility of the Public Service Sector Education and Training Authority, that moved from the Department of Public Service and Administration. Over the MTF, that amounts to 312 million. And then also on the next slide, you'll see that there's also a function shift for medical student funding. Now, previously, over the past 4 to 5 years, there was specific emphasis on medical students from the Department of Health, and those students with the funding is now included into the vote of our department as from this financial year, and it's specifically 75.3 million over the MTF period. The direct charges, as previously indicated for CETAS and MSF, grows with 6.7 billion rand over the MTF period. Now, unfortunately, as with all departments, we also have baseline deductions, and over the MTF period, there is a baseline deduction for the skills levy of 43 million rand, as well as other normal goods and services of 29.4 million rand. So the next two slides, slide 16 and 17, just gives you the breakdown of the allocations. First of all, on slide 16, the program. Now, there you can see the university education program, and the large amount that goes into university education. The second biggest program then, technical and vocational education and training, which is close to 7 billion rand, and then community education and training, just more than 2 billion rand. The total budget then for the department, 49.2 billion, and the direct charges 17.6 billion, gives us a total then on the vote of 66.8 billion rand for the current financial year. Now, if you look at slide 17, it takes the 66.8 billion and it just breaks it down between the most important items there. You can see that our compensation of employees, now approximately 7.8 billion for this financial year, and the huge item transfers and subsidies, 40.9 billion of the total allocation that goes into transfers and subsidies for NSFAS, our public entities, the CETAS, as well as the universities, the TV colleges, subsidies, as well as CET centers. Those are the big ones that we must pay every year. Now, on the one side, it looks very easy. The problem is that for every transfer we make, we must do proper monitoring and evaluation and to ensure that those funds are utilized for the purpose that they are transferred for, and that also places a high responsibility on the side of the department. On slide number 18, Chair, just very briefly, some of the key system pressures that we do experience. First of all, just to indicate that we do acknowledge the current financial and fiscal constraints of government, It does have an impact on service delivery. We are limited to what we can do with the available allocation. We are also unable to attain all the growth requirements that we have within the post-school education system. And that is in terms of enrollment, it is also in terms of infrastructure development. And if I refer to infrastructure development, I must emphasize that that also includes student accommodation, and it also includes a dedicated allocation for the TVET sector for infrastructure. The department aims at having a similar kind of infrastructure grant for the TVET sector as we have for the university sector, because that has never been the case in the past. We also need to increase operations and increase student support in all those sectors, and all of that will cost a lot of money. Those areas are all linked to the implementation of the white paper. And just to acknowledge that there is currently, and I think specifically, two processes, and the one was specifically identified by Mr. Patel, that is currently the Presidential Commission, who will look at the funding of universities and the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. But there's also a second process that's currently ongoing with National Treasury. The National Treasury appointed consultants to do a costing of the rollout of the white paper and to look at all the various financial implications thereof. The results are rather shocking, and I don't know what National Treasury is going to do with that, but it looks like billions of rand would be required if the department needs to function at full capacity. The key risks, if we talk about system pressures, remain student fee increases. While we have the allocation for the 2016 academic year zero fee increase and the carry through for that, it remains an open question what's going to happen in 2017 and the years thereafter. Then, on slide number 19, in terms of operational pressures, within the department itself, certainly there is still the cap on compensation of employees. We also experience a reduction of the departmental portion of compensation of employees, and that is placing a burden on the department and reduces the ability to roll out the new staff establishment in full, as well as regional presence. Institutional monitoring and evaluation, which I indicated earlier, remains limited, and the department is still heavily relying on NSA funding for certain of our activities, and the one key area, as an example, is the National Audit and Moderation Body, which is currently funded through the NSF as a project. Cost implications for examination services remain a big concern. We must continue with all the exams for TVETs, as well as CETs, and that in itself is highly costly, especially if we look at the funding for examiners and moderation, where the department is directly responsible for that. In terms of financial performance, just to highlight that the department came into operation on April 2010, you can see the limited rollovers that we had and the underspending that we had since 2011. And for the 2015-16 financial year, we may see a slight increase in that. That would be as a result of the compensation of employee surplus that we may experience on the TVET sector specifically, with good reasons around that, and we will ask the Treasury to see if we can roll over that amount. So I'm going then over to Program 1 Administration. For that program, there are three key strategic objectives. They relate to human resources, financial management, as well as information and communication technology. In terms of human resources, the key indicators in the IPP, those are, first of all, the funded positions filled. And I want to emphasize that it refers to approved funded positions, since our establishment is not funded, and the target for the year is that 90% of positions will be filled, which will leave us with a 10% vacancy rate. Disciplinary cases should be resolved within 90 days, and the department aims to meet that target in full. There are also the average number of days in which an advertised post can be filled, which is 180, and we hope to maintain that. In terms of financial management, the big important one there is creditor payment, age and number of days. In terms of the regulations, we are required to make payments within 30 days. We included it as a target. It is, under certain circumstances, a challenge to reach that target. Therefore, we've included it in the ICT and trying to manage that. In terms of the ICT procurement, it is the procurement plan that needs to be submitted for ICT. It will be one consolidated plan for the department, and that is the 2016-17 target. Chair, with that, I'm then going to hand over back to Mr. Patel to do this program two, planning, policy and strategy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CFO. Chairperson, before, and I don't remember, before I go into program two, in which I'm the acting head, I'd like to also indicate that the chief director in the office of the DG is also present with us. You wave to us. That's the full team. Going back to program two, planning, policy and strategy, this was the name change. It used to be human resource development, planning, information and monitoring coordination. The purpose really is to provide a strategic direction in the development, implementation and monitoring of departmental policies and the human resource development strategy that is driven by the Deputy President and managed by our Minister. We have one strategic objective in regards to developing policies. And so this branch is mainly a policy branch. We interact quite a bit with Parliament and with stakeholders in regards to policy consultation. So it will be the National Policy and Career Development Services. And this is a policy across all spheres of government. So we're looking forward to also make a presentation to the Portfolio Committee, Select Committee, because these career services are either there are big gaps in between, and all that duplication, everybody's running around like we have an exhibition. And we're hoping that we can get strong support, because no single minister is coordinating that. So our minister has been given this particular task in terms of his performance agreement to do that. So it will be, that's the thing why it's called national policy. It is not the intention of the policy is not to, it's just to coordinate, it's not to take over any function. Each department and each sphere will still continue to operate within its powers. And secondly, Chairperson, in order to deal with the issue of the demand for educational and training spaces, we have to very, very seriously look at investing in open learning and distance education, particularly around TVET. And in regards to open learning, what we're really saying is that to provide the, you see, in open learning, if we don't have a physical space, but if young people who with their own energies have access to the full scale of learning support materials through the internet, through whatever other particular means, are able to go to an assessment center and get themselves assessed, they don't have to wait for us until the building is built, etc. So that they themselves can make use of whatever time they particularly have. So, the indicator for the steering mechanism is a national policy on career development services across all spheres of government is published and finalized. So, there are still intensive processes that we have to go to cabinet, we have to have public consultation we will have here, provincial road shows, etc. And then the policy for open and distance education. In terms of strategic objective number two, we have two performance indicators. Now, as the CFO indicated, we have a big system. Big percentage, 80% is on transfers, and the only way for us to effectively ensure is we need to provide a type of an oversight over those particular entities we have transferred to in order for us to comply with the PMMA. So we need to have a sector monitoring and evaluation framework. So it is something like the APPs that we have right now presenting at Parliament. Is that all our institutions need to also begin to perform. Although, I mean, our TVET and community education training colleges and our universities are not required at the moment to comply with the framework for the APP. But we have to institute that as a caretaker department. And then monitoring reports across school education and training, we intend to have two reports published. That is the International Relations Monitoring Report. In other words, we undertake all these international visits and studies, but what are the agreements that we have signed? What have those agreements yielded in regards to our partnership? And then a approved macro indicator trend report. You know, have we made a dent over the last 5 years or 10 years or even 20 years in regards to the levels of educational attainment of the population and those type of indicators so that we can get a sense. Our strategic objective number three is to develop and implement a teaching and learning support plan aimed at improving access to quality learning and teaching. Now, Chairperson and Honourable Members and Honourable Chair, this is linked to the open and distance learning. So we're beginning already to pilot where we managed to develop a plan and materials for two programs to be piloted in 2017-18. And approved by 31st March 2017. And that is in the electrical particular field, so we can test it, we can measure it against the classroom-based learning, and be able to look at the efficacy of that. We will also, as I indicated, in the launch of the 26 million euro grant, EU grant, we've got a very big component there of also saying that when we do lecture development, we're also going to use some of those funds to develop materials for lecture development. And this material is a really interactive multimedia material. Then, in regards to the strategic objective four, information is absolutely important, and we are developing the information system. Yeah, we have one of the most sophisticated higher education management information system for our university, our education institution, called EMIS, where we have unit records for each individual. We will be able to find the record for any of our young people by name, by ID number, in which university they are, what programs are they doing, how long does it take for the programs. We are able to do that for each one of our colleges and also for each one of the teachers. Every person that gets money from this parliament, we need to know their name, their ID number, and what they are particularly studying. And then the private school, post-school institutions, private colleges, particularly is that our system did not have put a proper information around those. The thousands of these, especially if we now also count the skills development providers who were funded from the skills development funds through the Skills Development Act, also uncoordinated. And then lastly, the issue is statistical reports. How do we get the information out? What is the outcome of all the information system? Honorable Chair, we just released last month our annual post-school statistical report. That was published for the financial year 2015-16, but referring to the 2014 academic year, because it takes almost 18 months to collect each piece of that information. And then also an annual report, which will be the first on skill supply and demand, that will be published, that can be utilized by members of parliament, can be utilized by researchers, civil society, and providers, in regards to getting a picture of what actually are the skill shortages, where are the excesses. So, Chairperson, if I may hand over to Mr. Mabizela, who takes us to the university program.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the honorable members and colleagues. The program 3, University Education, our purpose is to develop and coordinate policy and regulatory frameworks for an effective and efficient university education system. And we also provide financial support, as was indicated by the CFO earlier, to the universities, to the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, NS1, the CHE, and the National Institute for Higher Education. Now, we've got 7 strategic objectives, and just to try and go quickly on all of them, the strategic objective 1 is to develop 7 new and review 2 policies or regulations or pieces of legislation to ensure sound provision of university education by 31st March 2017. Just want to emphasize on that date because it's an annual performance or annual delivery. But as we go along, you will see some of them are done before the end of this financial year, before 31st March 2017. And indeed, there would be progress on each and every one of them as the year unfolds. The first performance indicator there, or the performance indicator for the strategic objective 1, is that new higher education steering mechanisms are developed and approved. And just to highlight a bit on some of them, the professional qualifications for early childhood development, ECD, educators published in the government gazette, the policy on creative output and innovation output published in the government gazette, governance indicators, that would be a new one because we want to measure the performance of governance at our universities in particular. A policy on internationalization of higher education, again, that would be a new one. The policy on community service for graduates published in government gazette. We are doing that, we are working on that one together with the Department of Labor and the Public Service Administration, as well as the GPMD, the Planning and Evaluation. And we also will also be having a policy on differentiation in higher education over and above the differentiation of our university education system that we currently have. Part of which is defined by our historic pact, and also slide 31, revised funding framework on higher education institutions published in the government gazette. You may recall that this is following the work that was done by the TAM team that was led by the Deputy President before. He was the Deputy President. And as well as the revised policy, language policy for higher education published in the government gazette. This is the work that we have been doing even before the fees must fall. Since 2013, we've been working on revising the policy on languages. Now, I'm saying this because part of the FISMA's forum demands was the question of languages, especially at the former African universities. And then on the strategic objective two, to develop one integrated plan that will enable collaboration between university education and other future sectors by March 2017. And there's only one indicator there, and with the target of integrated plan for offering entry-level level 5 qualification in the PISA system approved for implementation. Basically, this is to facilitate what we call articulation, which is one of the main flagship programs of our white paper, the white paper on post-school education and training. Then strategic objective three, to monitor and evaluate the higher education sector and produce 12 annual oversight reports. Now here, all of these 12 annual reports are the work that we currently do. We've been producing this report annually. None of them is new. And you will also notice that the delivery of this report is throughout until 31st March 2017. So for instance, on the first one on higher education HRD and AIDS program, which includes the TVET sector, the report will be presented or will be submitted by 30th September 2016. The report on financial health of universities in the 2015 academic year, the report that the institution submits to the department are being analyzed and will be approved, and then that should be complete by 30th December 2016. The report on the effective use of the 2015-16 Foundation Provision Grant, and this is the grant that is an earmarked grant to the institute, to all the universities, to support, we call it foundation, mainly to support first-year students, especially those who have been identified to be needing extra support. Soon we will be changing the naming of it, because basically what it does, it leads to students, let's say if they have registered for 3-year degree to do it in 4 years, or if they are registered for 4-year degree to be allowed to do it over 5 years. So basically it's the extension of the curriculum for the students, especially those who have been identified to be needing support at the university. So that report to be submitted by 31st December 2016, a report on effective use of the teaching development grant, the grant that is given to the institutions to support development of teaching or lecturers to improve the graduate output, graduation output of the universities, again by December 2016. Similarly, we also have a research development grant also to assist the institution to be efficient in research production. By 31st December as well. The report on the 2015 research output, which it says 2015 because for this year the institutions are going to be submitting their research output of 2015, and therefore we do the adapt analysis and compile a report, and then that should be ready by the end of this financial year. The annual report on the effective use of infrastructure and efficiency grants for universities are also approved by 31st March next year. Annual report on the effective use of earmarked grants at the new universities because they still receive their subsidy grants from the department as an earmarked fund. Because they are still under development, the particularly our two new universities, and the third one, basically, which is Fagomakato University, not so much new in the sense of budgeting, because part of it is a this unbundling of the University of Limpopo. An annual report on the achievement of ministerial enrollment targets approved by the minister, and an annual report on private higher education institutions' compliance with the regulations also approved. And again, as I had indicated earlier, all those are the targets that we do, the reports that we do annually. An annual report on the implementation of Starting South African Universities framework, approved by the DG by 31st March. We started with that implementation last year, even though the work on it had started before then, but the first cohort got into the institution last year.
Yes.
Yes. And then strategic objective 4, which is to develop and implement a teaching and learning development capacity improvement program covering 5 plans to improve the capacity of universities in terms of teaching and research. And that capacity is to improve the teaching, also to include development of academics or lecturers at the TVET colleges. The whole of that strategic objective is around the teaching, partly of universities, academics at universities, academics at the colleges. And then the strategic objective 5, which is to develop and implement the student leadership capacity development strategy and central application services to support access to post-school institutions by 31st March 2020. That's not a mistake. And this is the work that is being rolled out for the central application system. Yearly, there would be a report that has developed because the work is ongoing. Strategic objective 6, publish an annual first-time entering undergraduate cohort analysis report. We will be having that before the end of this financial year, because the data had been collected, and then we're doing the analysis of what happened to the first-time entering students in the system. The strategic objective number 7, the last one, which is to facilitate stakeholder network through the establishment of BRICS think tank and participative academic forums and report progress on partnerships annually. And again, this is the work done within BRICS, is done annually. It doesn't matter which country hosts the academic forum. We will have our academics participating there, and then we compile the report. The think tank is located with the National Institute for Humanities and Social Sciences. So together with them, we'll be producing that report. And then on the systems performance, so a bit of statistics here. I won't be going item by item, so I'll just give you some indications and then talk broadly on them. These are the targets that we set. And I want to emphasize that the targets, when we set the targets, we set them on the basis of the capacity that the system has got. And that capacity includes academics and the equipment that is there at the institution, as well as then the funding that we give to the institution for the specific items. So that is the basis of the plan. Now, I'm emphasizing that because you will notice that just to pick up those last four items, graduate in engineering sciences, graduate in initial teacher education, doctoral graduate, research master, you will notice that from the baseline of 2014 academic year to the target for 2016-17, there is a decline in terms of the numbers here. And now that is exactly because of the plans that we do on the basis of the equipment and the resources. But then the indication is that we over exceed, we already had over exceeded. But it's difficult then to do a replan on the basis of having over exceeded the target. We must stick to what we are planning in terms of the facilities and capacity that we have. Be that as it may, the institutions have been requested to revise the targets on graduating engineering. So by about May, we will be having revised numbers. And if you turn over to the next slide, 44, you will also see the only targets that we had, we were planning the, on the same basis, but then there are increases. For instance, if you have first year students in foundation programs, of course we want more of them there. Elizabeth University students obtaining financial aid, and graduates in human health and animal health from universities. Again, we are targeting to have more there, most certainly because we have got a shortage in the country. And I won't go through the rest because I suppose to some extent the numbers speak for themselves, except to say that we are also guided by the NDP 2030. So our targets here are also relating or streamlined with the targets that are reflected in the NDP, the National Development Plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Patel. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I'll also take on the advice and summarize the presentation. I'm going to present on Program 4, which is a technical and vocational education and training. Program 4's purpose is to plan, develop, implement, monitor, and maintain and evaluate national policy, programs, assessment practices, and systems for technical and vocational education and training. There are six strategic objectives for Program 4, and if we look at the first one, it talks to the development of legislative and guiding frameworks aimed at steering the TVET sector by 31 March 2017. And the first one, if we look at the performance indicator and the target, it refers to in terms of the steering mechanism, it refers to the National Admission and Promotion Guidelines for NCV, which should be approved by the Minister by 31 March 2017. I just need to indicate that currently, in terms of the promotion in the NCV program, it is done through the exam circulars, and we need to make sure that this is done in a proper manner in terms of having a policy in place. Another steering mechanism, if we look at the next slide, it talks to the revised current costing model for TVET college programs, and this should also be approved by the end of 31 March 2017. The Minister has already put together a task team that looks at the revision of the funding norms, and in line with that, parallel to that process, there's a process of the development and revision of the costing model that will also take into account the third stream of funding. We're also looking at revising examination conduct policy for NCV, which should also be approved by 31 March 2017. This would also be in line with the revised NCV program in its totality. If we move on to strategic objective number 2, it talks to standardize the level of governance across TVET institutions, monitor and implement and take appropriate action when deficiencies are detected. In this regard, the department is developing a monitoring and evaluation framework, and that has already been done. And part of this process will be monitoring and evaluation report on TVET institutions, and that will happen twice per annum. And the key to this, as indicated in the strategic objectives, is that appropriate action can be taken when deficiencies are detected in the system. And if we look at strategic objective number 3, it refers to the development and implementation of teaching and learning support plans for TVET colleges. This is aimed at improving the certification and the throughput rates for the qualifications, and therefore annual and teaching support plans for TVET colleges will need to be approved by the Director General, and the report on the implementation of those teaching and learning support plans also to be approved by 31 March of 2017. we move on to the next one, also linked to the same strategic objective number four. There's the relationship between this strategic objective number four and the previous strategic objective number three, because the first one talks to teaching and learning, and this one talks to improve success in programs offered in TVET institutions by developing and implementing student support plans. Now, these student support plans are developed in conjunction with the teaching and learning plans, but they aimed at how students can be assisted, particularly in relation to academic support. Again, we are looking at improving certification rates and throughput rates. And such a plan needs to be developed, and thereafter, the implementation on the report on the implementation of the student support services plan will need to be approved by the Director General by the 31st of March 2017. We move on to the next strategic objective, which is strategic objective number five. It talks to ensure geographic spread of TVET institutions through the establishment of 12 additional sites of delivery, and the target date for all these 12 campuses is 31 March 2020. And part of the performance indicator and the target talks to college infrastructure facilities, and this needs to be reported on in terms of the maintenance of those facilities. And in terms of the target, looking at college infrastructure maintenance report, that will have to be approved by the Director General by the 31st of March. And if I can just also take this opportunity, based on the question that was asked by the chairperson earlier on in regards to the issues of infrastructure, three of these campuses are in a very, very advanced stage. One campus, which is Kabazin, is almost ready to be handed over, and two of them are progressing very well, with about 50% completion. And then 13 of the sites, the tender will have to be reissued, because the previous tender, those tenders that were submitted did not meet the requirements, and that will be submitted in the next week. And we just need to again just bear in mind, in terms of the totality of these 12 new campuses, that the due date is 2020. If we move on to the next strategic objective, which is number six, it talks to establishment and coordinating structure for the support and research in TVET sector by 31 March. This talks to the establishment of SafeSet, which will look at curriculum development, which will also look at curriculum revision where there is a need, and maintenance thereof, and of course in regards to work pertaining to research related to teaching and learning. We may now move on to the next slide, which talks to the system performance, which needs to be monitored and reported on. The first item there is the issue of enrollment. The baseline is 709,535, and the target for 2016-17 is 829,000. The certification rates, in terms of TVET qualifications, they are segregated in terms of the exit levels. And therefore, the exit levels for NCV will be level 4, and for the native programs will be N3 and N6. That is the baseline that we are working on, and the target is 40% for level 4, 65% for N3, and 45% for N6. We are all aware of the challenges and the progress that has been made in relation to the issuing of certificates to qualifying candidates. The current baseline for the issuing of those certificates is sitting at 12 months, and the department is committed to cutting that down to issuing out certificates within 3 months. There's also a correlation in terms of the percentage of public TVET college examination centers conducting national examinations and assessments in compliance with the national policy, because if there's no compliance, it leads to challenges, which among others will also affect the issuing of certificates and the leakages of exam papers and so forth. The current baseline is 70%, and we are saying that we are aiming for that target to be at 100%. The throughput rate in terms of the target for 2016-17 is 15%. Although this may look like a relatively low target, I just want to also take this opportunity to inform Chairperson and the Honourable Members that we come from a single-digit throughput rate, and therefore we are hoping to see even a much better and significant increase in relation to that. In terms of the additional beds for accommodation of students, I think the issue of student accommodation in colleges is a much, much bigger challenge than universities. I'm not saying that universities don't have a challenge, but the situation gets even worse when we look at the situation in our colleges. The baseline is low in terms of availability of beds, and then the 1,000 target for 2016-17 is 1,000 additional to the current baseline. Of course, we're limited by resources in this regard. Qualifying students in terms of obtaining financial assistance, and this is through NSFAS, we're looking at 200,000 additional annually. And funded entry students, which are those bursary beneficiaries, who qualify within the stipulated time frame, the target is 14%. And this target is consumer-like with the previous target of the overall student population that are reported on in the previous slide. TVET institutions compliant to government standards by 2019 and increasing every year thereafter, the target is currently set at 30%. And students entering the foundation programs by March of next year, the target is 5,000. I'm not going to talk to each and every number, I'm just going to talk to the totals in terms of the enrollment, which is the next slide, which talks to headcount student enrollment. And these headcounts are broken down per province and per financial year. We are, in terms of the previous financial year and academic year, we were at 709,535,2014-15, and for 2016-17, the target is 829,000, which is for this academic year. In terms of the student enrollment and growth, we would like that you note the following, that the headcount student enrollment is projected to grow from the actual figure of 710,535 in 2015 to 829,000 in 2016. And that figure increasing to 2.5 million by 2030. Those are the targets that we expect. The growth is in line with the target set in the white paper for post-school education and training. It is projected that the sector will grow by 16.7% from 2015 to 2016 and 14.4% from 2016 to 2017. However, growth in the sector is only achievable if additional funding as well as infrastructure capacity is created. The annual performance plan is projecting a headcount of 829,000 as presented in the previous slide, and that is for 2016 academic year. And colleges have indicated to the department that in terms of their own projections based on their capacity, resources and infrastructure, that they will only manage to enroll about 727,000 students in 2016, and therefore there's a possibility that that target of 829,000 will not be met. And in terms of the structure, budget and expenditure trends in TVET colleges, the total budget for 2016-17 financial year will round it off to 6.6 billion. And then if we move to the next slide, we will see the budget allocation per province for our colleges. And the growth is equitable in terms of all nine provinces, and that growth is estimated at 6.7%. Similarly, in relation to the bursary allocation and the percentage growth, we have an indication of the allocation per province in terms of the bursary allocation, and the growth is 5.3%. Chairperson, honorable members, that was the presentation on program 4. Thank you.
Thanks very much, honorable chairperson, honorable members, as well as colleagues. This is program 5, skills development. If we look into slide 61, program purpose, to promote and monitor the national skills development strategy, develop a skills development policy and regulatory framework for an effective skills development system. In this program, we are having six targets. I'll just focus on six targets, and then we're having three strategic objectives. Target number one is to develop a workplace-based learning program and regulations which will be approved by the minister by 31st December 2016. And number two is National Skills Development Strategy approved by the minister by 31st March 2017. Mr. Patel earlier on spoken around these two targets in the main. CETA landscape approved by the minister by 31st March 2017. CETA monitoring reports, that will be slide 64. CETA monitoring reports on skills development approved. Then we go to slide number 65. You'll see the average lead time from trade test application received until trade test conducted at Indiana in terms of number of days. This is like a turnaround time, 120 days. National Artisan Learners Fast Trade Test Rate at Indiana, our target there is 52% per annum. If you go to slide number 56, they were dealing with system performance targets to be monitored and reported. And in that area where workplace-based learning opportunities, our baseline was 27,000, the target is 120,000. New artisans qualified per annum, so our target for this year is 21,110. New artisan learners registered nationally per annum, our target there is 30,750. National artisan learners employed or self-employed, 67% will be measuring as well in this particular area. Proportion of CETAs meeting standards of good governance. Then we are saying there in that area, 100% of all CETAs should be meeting requirements of good standards in terms of governance. Thanks very much, Chairperson, colleagues.
This is one of the new programs, Program 6, Community Education and Training. Just before I proceed, may I ask the honorable members during their spare time to look at the addendum in the 18, which outlines the strategic plan for this program. And also in the APP, it may be varied in looking at the performance environment for this program, so that there may be an understanding. The point to be made, we are trying to make something which was never a system, a system. Now, both provinces and national departments in 2008, I think 2009, were audited by the AG to develop an education sector report. The AG is critical of the following thing in the education sector report, both at national and in provinces. Poor quality, funding disparities, lack of responsiveness of programs to communities, inefficiencies, non-standardization of educator salaries, and poor monitoring, poor capacity for monitoring, and somewhat outdated curriculum, and then the lack of learning and teaching material. Now, it's going to sound like a speech. I don't want to read the presentation, I will refer you to the presentation. Now, for us to create a system, we have to develop frameworks. And that is strategic objective number one. And those four frameworks that they stand there, they require to the development of four frameworks in order to have a system, an instrument with which to regulate community education and training. That is 64 and 68 and 69. I've spoken to the issue of quality. The approval of the IOT education and training and development improvement plan goes to the core of college I referred to earlier. And the infrastructure, at the moment we have established in law 9 community colleges, 1 in each province. And we have linked to each community college a number of centers, the biggest number is in KZ. Now the next project that we must undertake is to set up norms, what is a community learning center supposed to be, and then what is a college, what would be the size of a big, small, medium college, and what should be the minimum establishment of the center, so that we create a system which we can be able to monitor. And to this effect, then we also want to, the approach in this program is to at least have programs at about 30%, which are centrally determined, your formal program, your second chance matric, your literacy program, as well as your GTC level 4. But most of the program we have to engage with communities, community organizations, CBOs, to tap as to what exactly are their needs, so that then we can respond to what they need and in various communities. And we have reason to believe that various communities are going to ask for various things. And that is why we need to have that strategy which will enable us to relate with communities. And basically, the last two targets have got to do with, on slide 72, have got to do with projected enrollment on formal programs and certificate rates on formal programs. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your presentation. To be very clear on a number of issues, however, members have an opportunity here and now to ask a question. But given the time constraint, some of the members, I would like maybe to ask your question, but prioritize in the sense that you start with those questions. The department is responsible here and now. And people for the number of questions, then you can actually request, or we can request the department to respond in writing to put it for the chat section. So I'm going to give this number at least 2 questions to respond to. The rest, let us put them in writing so that they can respond at the next stage. I see another Kaula said of another Islamin, another Republic of Islam, in that order so far. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, the Department of Higher Education, colleagues. I quickly raise my hand, Honorable Chairperson, because I'm going to be requesting to leave. Thanks for the presentation. I don't mind my questions can be responded to in writing, but if they are responded to orally, they are also can be responded from my colleagues. The first one is pertaining the comparison that I'm doing between the funding of universities and the funding of the civil scholarships. On slide number 17, where it shows that universities are funded big time and the civil scholarships. I'm not saying it's enough for universities, but I'm saying when you compare, the civil scholarships are so much underfunded. Now, this then maybe is contributing to this mentality in our communities that serious colleges are not important. The serious college education is the kind of education that is not important, and therefore everybody must go to university to get important education. I don't want to say quality, I want to say important education. Is the department not also contributing to this mentality with this kind of allocation? This is my number one. Now, coupled with this honorable chairperson, is what has just happened, which you referred to, the field must fall issue. are we as the department not also establishing some kind of a foundation to the field must fall kind of activities also with the serious colleges with this kind of application? Where if the serious colleges get this kind of information, they then begin to say, oh, they did ABC with the university so that they get the adequate funding. Let's also follow through and do the same because we are not getting the kind of attention that we deserve. I'm just putting this on the table as food for thought to the department on our chapter. I wanted to find out on slide 20 if we are talking those figures representing kind of spending, is it billions or millions? The response is quick. It's millions. And then I also noted something on slide number. Well, I did have the same query with education in the past, with the kind of projections you give us for what is going to be your past percentages. I guess what even the department tells us, we are expecting a success rate of 80%. My question is, how can government plan to pay it? How does that happen? You know, when you talk to basic education, they say, oh, we want to achieve with grade 12 as a pass rate of 80%. But you've got 100% learners, you've got 100 kids, you are saying to us, you're going to say, what is the department you're saying in other words to us is, out of 100, you're going to pay 20. You see, your success rate for as long as they are not 100%, for me, they remain a problem. Because the department is saying to us, honorable chairperson, no, we are going to fail the rest. The department is saying this, so I have a problem with it. Thank you, Chair President.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honourable Chair, let me welcome the presentation from the department. And do say that it is quite a presentation. Understood. But Chair, just want to start from the questions we asked them last. From the other venue, it's 5-1-4. A question that said, in terms of the NDP, it should be guiding us as a country where we are going to. Where do we end as a country in terms of things requirements that will take us to the vision that we anticipate as a country? There was a whole list of questions that were raised, which we agreed that the department could answer. But as they present now, I don't have a fear that we'll get into that, because you can have a dream, but if you don't have means to reach your dream, it will remain a dream. Where do we stand as a country in terms of security? Where do we stand as a country? I'm repeating the same question I asked. Where do we stand? What is it that we want to achieve? At least the NDP is trying to guide us in the vision 2063. It does try to guide us where we want to go to. But where do we stand? What skills do we need? And what are you planning as a department at that point? I don't have a full chair, but we are really trying to answer. Those are serious issues, matters if we were to move as a country. And it's only this department that can assist us to do that. That is my help to train so many people who are not taking us to where we want to go. The second matter, Chair, is we are limited in terms of questions. Is the question of accommodation. The presentation said the biggest problem at college level, which I fully agree with you, but there is also a big problem at university. talking about 1,000. For me, as a blend, it will assist me to say, I'm talking as a blend and I'm not as a politician. It does assist when we say, in terms of accommodation needs, both college and university, we need so much. But with the sources that we have, we can only afford this. But now you're just coming up with 1,000. What informs the 1,000? I think even if you can allocate this 1,000 only to one province, still not enough. If I may, for argument's sake, split it into provinces, it means one province will have 100. I would want to see Chapman a bigger picture. It will assist us also in the state, in the community. And what are the plans? Because if you were saying that you are planning to address the issue of accommodation in the next 5 or 10 years, but for this year, we're going to do this. Where is this 1,000 building up to? What are the questions I have, Chair?
Thank you. Let me go back to all that encounter.
Thank you very much, Chair. I forgot just one issue, the Fazil Municipal funding to offset that, to offset that issue. Where did the fund come from? I'm saying because there was an irresponsible reporting in the newspaper that you were taking money from the citizens to offset the issue of Fazil Municipal. Now, it must be clarified because people read the newspaper and you know, they ask questions and stuff like that. Can you allow us to that you did not drop to that paid pressure? Because checkers in the status, money comes from government and also from the private sector. So it's important that we get the information on this. Thank you.
Any other
comments
for the
thank you, Chairperson. Checkers in so much, and I wouldn't mind if the other sponsors responded in writing this, because some of the questions Honorable Kawa, the previous speaker, has alluded to them. 33 students at the Wesley College in the Western Cape, up until now, it's April, have been promised that their traveling allowance will be given. Up until now in April, nothing has been said, and this has been communicated in the local newspapers, and it's seen by the needy parents as a form of abuse in the two African thing of the Lofty Max girl. They've been promised, they didn't get the books, but the traveling allowance was not allocated. So the two of them, and the rest of 61% has received. So it also poses, why did you get and why did I not get? So among students, the tension is rising and seen as being marginalized, being categorized from the students. If I could ask the department to follow that, and specifically in the worst place, Tibet College. Much already. In extension to that, some of the students have just one, this is just an information one. Students who migrate from the Western Cape to Gauteng province with a network funding after the first year, can they continue to still get the funding if they migrate to another province? With regards to the Fizz Maxwell campaign, what are the planned efforts to respond to the missing middle? It has been a very big issue about the missing middle. Those who are coming from the middle class of police, teachers, nurses, who can still afford to be there but cannot afford the fees, and some are single parented. With regards to the reinvestment of the past learners who have received bursaries on network funding, what is the status in terms of what we have received in paying back the money? We haven't had, I haven't had the presentation, if is there any justice into your department, getting back the money so that you can respond to the needs of the learners in terms of accommodation. And all the arrested students who vandalized your higher institutions, I want to know what is the status in terms of, we've heard from one media to another, they've been arrested, and what is the status in that regard? Please give full details for each and every higher institution, where they're from this to Free State, wherever. The means test, which has precipitated the Fees Must Fall campaign, is there any means of responding to what this committee has suggested in terms of promoting academic performance in awarding the network funding? Because what tends to happen, those people who receive it are not using it adequately and are failing, and those who qualify academically are not getting it. And if you could get some detailed information, Chairperson, in terms of each province, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Also, just referring to the TEA, the program, what is the area of concern? Is the throughput rate, and I understand it comes from single feeds, and yet we invest 2.2 billion in bursary. So now, if this was a private company, and I know you can't argue that way, because we are investing in our citizens' future, in the growth of our country, and any investment in that, any growth is on the plus side. But with a target of 2016-2017, 15%. Throughput rate and the massive investment in this. Also looking at, on the other side, on the demands from universities, there must be some plan in place to address the root of the problem. We can't invest this type of money with so little to show for it right at the end. I don't know whether there's a plan in place. Perhaps a lot of colleagues have asked too little investment in the on the other side on the subsidy side. Do we have to lift the standard of TVET colleges, of the educators there, lecturers? But what is the plan to get from single figures going to 15%, what guarantee do we have that we will in fact reach 15%? Well, that's a complex issue and affects definitely hundreds of thousands of people, students out there, all looking for a better future. But this is, the investment doesn't give papers to a better future.
Thank you very much, Lord Member. As well as the department will respond to those issues where they can and respond the right thing with some of the issues. But maybe before one leaves, because I'm also looking off to the airport, would you understand the functioning of the department, all the programs of the department, the sub-programs, the performance and so on, in a certain level, where we engage the department for 2 hours and the second department. If other members also agree with me, maybe it is ideal that we've got at least a one-day workshop, full-day, in order for us to be able to attend and understand the dynamics of the department of higher education. That would be my proposal. because with this kind of engagement, it's starting to go, we are looking at critical issues, but we don't have a full understanding at inside in what is involved, in what the challenges are, and what the solutions are that can resolve a number of the challenges that the department is facing. That is my first proposal. With regard to question, mine will be responded to in writing, not now. Firstly, the issue of employment. I know that the DDG for GSET was acting. I don't know whether he's been acting. Why has the employment not finalized? You have introduced a sixth program, Mr. Patel, which I believe would require the employment of the DDG to run, and the staff, the chief director under him, and so on. Is there a budget, direct a budget, to kickstart this program in a way that is effective? That is my second question. The next question is the presence of the Department of Higher Education in COVID. We are actually seeing people on the ground in pharmacy. How do we have offices in the province where people in the province can go to if they've got problems? Because they are not going to go to case out. Neither are they going to go to the province. They need to be settled where they are. How visible or how effective are you at the department at the level of COVID? And then the issue of migration, the completed migration of the Hebert College, the Netflix colleges, we have to migrate our degrees, colleges of agriculture, and various other colleges that offer a higher education, qualification. Are we ready for that, and what are your plans? And what are the budgetary implications for that? In your presentation for programs, you informed us that the rolling out of the first Tibet policy is on progress, and one has been completed, the other has not been completed, but they are due to be completed. We don't even know where they are, and you don't know what your plan is with regard to the remaining one. Who is going to benefit from that one? I don't want to go back to what Honorable Hartinger raised in terms of the output vis-a-vis the investment that you make. We're not here. The certification rate is also a cost of emphasis for us. Once the person has completed the study, they need to be certificated because they need the certificate for employment. They don't have to wait for 12 months to read before a certificate is awarded. Why is there such a delay? I know that you are trying to address this, but it should be sustained. And it should be such a manner that people qualify, they can certificate. All the institutions that are involved for purposes of qualification, let them rally together and agree and produce a decision. So that people are not inconvenienced when they need to go and take your employment. And then the issue of qualification. I want to believe, Mr. Patel, a qualification should be commensurate with salary. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it should also be commensurate with the workload that I'm receiving. A lot of work still needs to be done in this regard, especially with respect to civil quality. I don't think it is important. The systems are failing. With respect to how do you determine payment for a person that has got an N5 qualification and a person that has got a degree or a senior degree and they are paid equal salary? It doesn't make sense. So we need to look into those issues and resolve them, because if they remain unresolved, they become a cause for riots, strife, and the retarded progress that are supposed to be made. I'm raising this because when you do the change the region, these are the issues that you know Jay have been asked, saying that they have not been attended to for a long time. How far is the department in trying to solve those issues. Those were my questions and input as to say that we thank you very much for the good work that you do. This is a very big when it's about time you started to say that all the institutions for which I'm sponsoring will have to begin to submit entities and such things. I begin to think that you are going to be looking at about 100 entities. And it's the moment of time, we are going to get there, but let us put our systems in place and we'll have for our own mission. Thank you. You can respond, but I'll give you an ask.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to go very quickly. The Honorable members have indicated some of the responses will come in writing.
Mm.
I will also not be very open to the team to respond, but I will indicate the specific areas where I think colleagues could respond. Honorable Kaula, the question that they raised is yes, the funding is absolutely skewed in terms of TVET and university. Yes, it's correct that it is devaluing TVET because people are chasing more opportunities at university. We have a strategy in regards to lifting the prestige of TVET university, TVET colleges in regards to our artisan development program as well as our artisan of the decade. But can I say that it's true and that we didn't watch it? The issue of success rates, we will respond to that in writing. CFO, can you respond to the where did the fees come from? There was a series of announcement around that. Honorable Dlamini, we will follow up on last year's questions that you said were not particularly answered. In regards to what skills do we require as a country and how do we plan, at the moment, our biggest planning mechanism is our seekers. In regards to skills, because the legislators compels us to ensure that we have workplace skills plan where the employer together with the workers will identify both the issues of new skills that are required as well as upskilling and up-training. So we do have those very strong signals from there. Our second strong signal is from government, and particularly in terms of infrastructure projects. We have a project manager for SIPS at DDG level with considerable work has been done in identifying per project in terms of the infrastructure project or what are the likely skills to be particularly required. We've also, ministers invested quite a bit of funds in regards to the Central Labour Market Intelligence Project. As well as a skills planning mechanism. So we have an idea, and if you look at our targets, in particular in some of those targets where we've particularly zoomed into artisan training as well as at university in terms of the engineering sciences and the health sciences, and there are specific targets in dealing with this. The issues in the accommodation we will respond in writing, but can I just indicate here at the outset that there is no money, there are no funds. We have a very comprehensive report in terms of Mr. Mabizena may want to just spend 2 minutes on indicating about that particular report. On the college front, we haven't had a comprehensive report. We're busy collecting that information from colleges. We agree that 1,000 is minimal, but But the CFO has reminded us that there's actually no money in infrastructure. And this 1,000 in any case is funded from the money we got from the skills fund in regards to those 12 colleges. Honorable Pambo, I think your questions, and you did indicate that, I mean, there's a lot of detail around Westlake, around the terminal allowance. We will have to go in and check this out. But your question was so detailed, and I'm wondering if the Secretariat will be able to give us a bit more flesh around that. You also asked a question of migration from West Cape to Gauteng. My understanding is that the fund remains with the college in regards to that. That the fund will be reallocated within that particular college.
Okay.
And that student. But we will ask, I will clarify that, so I'm speaking from a limited background, but we will respond to that if I can. The middle, we also got a report on what is going on. It is linked to the Presidential Commission. The NSFAS, that is voting for university students, previous students don't repay because they get bursaries. But there are loans to university students, and we won't be able to give you that number. If the CFO has it, he'll give it, but otherwise, we've got zero tolerance in regards to the vandalization of vandalized property. The students that were arrested will also get information, but we're hoping that that the arm of the law is fully extended and that rule of law is maintained. We've got zero tolerance for that particular issue. The means test should not focus on academic merit. It is actually designed in that way. It is first academic merit and then poverty. Also, you require legal information for province. We'll follow that up. Honorable Hassan, yes, the concern of the throughput rate is of great concern given to us. But the issue, the question is to ask, is we took over the CVET colleges, the community colleges, on the 1st of April 2015. Was this problem caused from the 1st of April 2015 to now? Or was it a problem in our system all the time when it was under a different management system? So it's a valid question to ask. We are also extremely concerned about it, and therefore all our plans and all our processes are geared towards it. Honorable Chair, the CFO indicated in millions of rands what we have left to be able to manage the system after transfers and personnel costs. But it looks like 300 million, but it's 0.3% of our budget. 0.3% of our budget. And the question then is, how does any project, even in the NSF, even the CETA, give an average of between 5 to 10% of project management? Now really this is societal, and 0.3% we will continue. And therefore, we have a plan in regards to what our minister, what our DG, to be able to really look at this particular process and to prioritize it. Now, we know that the fees must fall. It has really caused a lot of interruption in the system. Nobody wants to hear education wants more money because, as the CFO had allocated, we got a very generous increase in our budget to be able to deal with this particular issue. And I think I have to make this statement. Unfortunately, we cannot guarantee that we will reach 15%. But this is an aspirational target. As somebody indicated the dream, but it's actually an aspirational target because we're going to strive and we're going to struggle in terms of all those processes, monitoring, and evaluation mechanisms to ensure that we will raise it. We will want to bring accountability to the level of the principal and the lecturer, and they must account for the students as I indicated in the information system, we've got students by ID number, we will have to look at the performance and we have to deal with it. There's a tough battle ahead, we will have to deal with collective agreements, we will have to deal with teacher conditions, including performance evaluation. The chairperson, I think that's welcome. I think one day will be enough because chairperson, honorable chair, for the meeting. The issue is that a lot of these questions are related not to the APP in terms of our plan, but in terms of searching questions around asking about our system and about asking particular reports. We are willing to make ourselves available for a day or even a day or more to give a full briefing. So I'm hoping that the portfolio committee secretariats, together with our parliamentary liaison, people in the ministry, can also ensure that at least we have the minister and the deputy minister available so the data must be checked. And we're really willing to come and have the good song. Yes, the response in terms of the vacant DDG corporate services, DDG community education, which only came into existence last week or week before last. We give a progress report on what the recruitment processes are in regards to that. And then, of course, the post that I left out, which is vacant. In regards to the migration issue that the chair raised, I think that's quite easy, but I want to indicate to the select committee that the nursing is not yet on the table and there's discussion we'll have to take with the Minister of Health. But I must indicate that initial issues is that if we remember the partnership for colleges was quite painful, the relieving department and the receiving department, etc. So at the moment there is work being done with the National Treasury, together with the legal people, together with GPSA, and there are already some issues arising and which we can foresee that there's going to be some difficulties in regards to the movement of the function. Already the principals have a forum and have indicated that they don't want to move, and that is outside mandates that government has in regards to that. Output versus expenditure. Output versus expenditure is correct. It's out of sync, but it's a link to Honorable Hacking's question around do we get value for money. The certification, I must say that it's greatly improved, and we'll give you a report because the CETA have been put under scrutiny by the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair.
No.
And I don't know if you may want to just very quickly, for 30 seconds, if you want any feedback, otherwise we will still follow up and write.
No, thank you very much. I think even those responses that you have made, if you still feel that you want to elaborate further, you can build more experience. I want to appreciate the responses that you have made and comment on one of your responses that most of the questions asked are not related to the APP. Precisely, that is why you are bringing it here. You're not just bringing it to us to listen to you and say, oh, no. It means to me, these are the things that members feel that are supposed to be part of the APP. Not just general questions. I will make an example with my questions. I would have expected that we are going to conduct a research on the skills gap in order to address our vision as a country. You see? That is why we are raising this question. It also goes to the questions from other members to say, we feel that these things are supposed to be part of the vision. We are influencing the APP. That is why you are here. So that at the end of the day, there is an ownership of the plan. We also own the plan that we did make some input on the plan. The issue of the finances, the budget, fully appreciate, but you still have some work to do on the side. take the example of the accommodation I find. If you come to me and say, I'm asking money for accommodation, I say, I will ask you, how much money do you want? You won't tell me if you don't have numbers of the required accommodation. It means that as much as you want to be given money, but from your side, you must have done your groundwork, put your plans in place with figures, so that you are able to convince a person of yes, that you need money. So, in terms of budget, not dispute about that, very late, you just like one department you need to make earlier, that you can't operate that money in this size of a department. You feel that very good, but it means that there are some more that you need to do every department. I want to thank you very much for the presentation and responses and all members, the meeting is ended. Thank you.